This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive. This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
Well, the music actually played to the end instead of abruptly cutting off. That was pleasant. Well, that means that it's exactly midnight here in New York City on listener-supported, non-commercial, WBAI 99.5 FM. And that was a rebroadcast of the Evening News con su edición en Español Informativo. And all of that means that, with any luck at all, it's time for what's coming up next, which would be, and in fact will be, This. Moorish. Orthodox. Radio. Crusade. Anarchism for the global city. Radical environmentalism for the concrete jungle. Esoteric explorations of the secret history of rebel culture. The Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. Every Tuesday at midnight after the news, only on listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. Be there.
Thank you.
coming off of a half-hour set of Turkish music here on the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. On listener-supported non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM here in New York City, where my name is Bill Weinberg, and it is mere seconds to 12:30 in the morning. Big thanks to everybody who pitched in, whether by volunteering or by actually pledging money during our late fun drive here, and particularly all of you who gave it up for the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. Very, very grateful. I don't care what anybody says. 770 2 weeks in a row is not too shabby, given the hour and how often we have been asking the listeners for their hard-earned moolah in recent months. So, thanks to all of you guys out there. Big shukran, gracias, etc. to you. And please remember to pay your pledge. Very, very, very important. If you made a pledge, you've got to, like, you know, pay it, because we really need your money. And merely making the pledge doesn't mean a thing unless you pay it. Okay. So, why are we playing Turkish music tonight? First of all, because it's really, really great music. And I should identify it, shouldn't I? We started off with a cut from the sort of eclectic East meets West techno sounds of Mersan Dede. And then we heard some more traditional stuff. We heard a couple of cuts from the Saz master, Talip Azkan, from his classic album, The Dark Fire, of a couple of years back. The Saz being the Turkish variant of the oud, as it's known in the Arab world, or the lute, as it's known in Europe, although really, in fact, the lute is a variant of the oud, and the oud is a variant of the Saz. The Saz was the original instrument, going all the way back to Afghanistan, the greater Turkic sphere of Asia. And then we heard a couple of cuts. Actually, we just heard one cut. We'll hear a little bit more later from an album called Echoes of Anatolia, Music from Istanbul. This is Turkish classical music, as from the glory days of the Ottoman Empire, as interpreted by contemporary musicians. That's from a label called Multicultural Media. And that's the first reason that we're playing Turkish music tonight, because I've been saving up this music for a long time. I've been wanting to do a Turkish music special, and tonight we're doing it. Really, really good stuff, and we'll be hearing more of it later after I get my little rant out of the way. Which brings me to the second reason that we're playing Turkish music tonight, which is to tweak the neo-Nazis. Because, as you know, Germany is very much in the news at the moment. But for the wrong reasons, I would argue. We're getting the wrong story out of Germany, and there are some very, very important stories out of Germany and Central Europe which are not making the headlines right now, as we're all being clobbered with this big media coverage of the celebrations of the fall of the Berlin Wall 20 years ago. And, you know, people who follow what's been going on in recent years in Germany will know that the neo-Nazis have been, you know, they don't have too many Jews to kick around in Germany anymore. So they've been kicking around Turkish immigrants. They've got plenty of them. So that's why one of the reasons we're playing Turkish music tonight is to tweak the neo-Nazis as they celebrate the, along with lots of Germans who are not neo-Nazis, as they celebrate the fall of the Berlin Wall. So, you know, as I mentioned a couple of weeks back, this is an important 20-year commemoration for me as well, because exactly as the Berlin Wall was coming down, I moved into my apartment where I've been living for the past 20 years. The same week that the Berlin Wall came down, I moved into my apartment in NoHo, my little cramped walk-up flat with a detached bathroom out in the hall, one of the real old-school type remodeled 19th century tenement apartments still left in the city. In fact, I got a friend who writes for the New York Times, and he's been thinking about doing a feature about my apartment because I'm probably one of the few tenants left in New York City who still has a detached bathroom. I have to go out to the hall and when I want to use the bathroom. And I'm proud of it, by the way. Wouldn't have it any other way because that's part of what keeps my rent so low. And, of course, if I ever leave or they ever get me out, that's the first thing that they would do is rearrange the plumbing so the bathroom would no longer be detached, which would be their big MCI, major capital improvement, which would allow them to jack up the rent quite significantly. But that's all an aside. The story I wanted to tell is that the week that I moved in to my apartment, the Berlin Wall came down. And I was as happy as anybody that the Berlin Wall was coming down. And in fact, I'd been sort of involved in the politics of what was then called Eastern Europe. And now, the terminology has actually changed. And now, Germans, even in the former east part of Germany, will get all offended if you refer to that as Eastern Europe. And similarly, the Czechs and the Poles will get all offended if you refer to them as Eastern Europe. They want to be Central Europe now. But back then it was Eastern Europe, and the line was the Berlin Wall, quite obviously. I had been involved. In fact, I got to know the co-host of the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade, Anne Marie Hendrickson, in the context of these efforts. I was involved in a group which she co-founded, in fact, called Neither East Nor West, which was attempting to provide solidarity for anti-nuclear activists in Russia, then the Soviet Union, and draft resistors in Poland, and dissidents generally in the East Bloc who were progressive instead of conservative and pro-capitalist, and who had a critique of, as our name implied, the West as well as the East. And there were, very significant such efforts in those years. So I was very enthused when the movement started to emerge in what was then called Eastern Europe, that there was going to be the possibility for some kind of third camp emerging, the possibilities for green politics and anarchism or socialism with a human face, which had long been opposed by both superpowers, most notoriously in, the Soviet invasion of Czechoslovakia in 1968. Any kind of looser, more democratic, humanistic kind of socialism was opposed by both camps. The pathology of the Cold War. So I was by virtue of having been immersed in this solidarity work that I was doing with Neither East Nor West, I perhaps had an exaggerated sense of the degree to which these more progressive anti-capitalist, anti-Stalinist elements had in the movements which were emerging in the East Bloc, but nonetheless they were I know the history, and they were quite significant, and they've largely been written out of the official history because they were shunted aside very quickly, and it really was Greens and anarchists and so on who really were quite often at the forefronts of those movements, and they were almost immediately shunted aside within a year of the Berlin Wall coming down. They were, shunted aside by Western-backed conservatives and technocrats and capitalist restorationists. But nonetheless, at the moment, like a lot of other people, I was very, very enthused that the Berlin Wall was coming down. And in fact, one of the first things I did when I moved into my new apartment, of course, my new apartment actually being a very old and decrepit apartment, but new for me, was I put up on the walls, up on the nice, clean, fresh walls, I pinned up newspaper clippings with photo footage of the big protests in Berlin and Prague and Budapest and so on, which were happening at that time. And a friend of mine who I won't mention by name, but who is an emigre from Germany, came over to my apartment and saw the photos on the wall and said, "I wouldn't be so happy if I were you. I wouldn't be celebrating this. There's a dark side to it." And I said, "What do you mean?" And she pointed out to me the significance of the date that the Berlin Wall actually came down, which was, of course, November 9th of 1989. And she pointed out to me that November 9th was also the date in 1938 of the Kristallnacht pogrom, which, of course, I knew, but I never made the connection until she brought it up, that it happened on the same date, which, of course, historians now consider to be the opening episode of the Final Solution, where Jewish homes and shops and synagogues all over Germany were ransacked in an orgy of violence, which was unleashed by the Nazi Party in the so-called Night of Broken Glass or Kristallnacht, as of course you all know. So, is it just coincidence? Well, I don't know if it's just coincidence. The Kristallnacht itself was likely unleashed on that date because 20 years before that, on November 11th of 1918, was the armistice, which ended the First World War and saw the fall of the Kaiser and the end of the Second Reich. The Nazi regime, of course, being the Third Reich, and the empire of the Kaiser being the Second Reich, seen as a resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire, which was the First Reich. Then, interestingly, in 1999, Egon Krenz, who was the East German leader who, after the Berlin Wall went up, enforced the policy of shooting down anybody who tried to go over it to escape East Germany, on that same day, on November 9th of 1999, he was sentenced to prison. And one wonders if this is all mere coincidence or, maybe the criminal justice system in the Federal Republic was actually trying to make a point when they sentenced Egon Krenz to prison on November 9th, 1999. Now, was there a link between the Berlin Wall coming down on November 9th, 1989, on the anniversary of Kristallnacht? Some kind of spontaneous, deep historical memory stirring in the German people? Or was it some actual conspiracy where, no, I don't think so, where, some secret agents were pulling the strings behind the scenes to bring about a Nazi restoration? No, I don't think so. Or was it mere coincidence? Well, I'm not entirely convinced that it was mere coincidence either, but it is interesting. And when my friend pointed it out to me, I didn't take down the news clips, and I was still generally happy and enthused about what was happening in Eastern Europe at the time, but it made me think. And, of course, what we've witnessed since then has made me think a hell of a lot more. And we've seen, this huge resurgence of xenophobia and ultra-right activity in Germany in the years since then, and even more so elsewhere in the post-communist world. To the point of, actual fascist movements coming to power, I would argue, in the former Yugoslavia, and I mean both in Croatia and in Serbia, by the way, where Tudjman and Milosevic are concerned. I say a plague on both their houses. You know, there was some really horrific events, such as the which nobody is recalling right now in this media orgy of, you know, boosterism. Nobody's recalling the what was it, 1991, I believe, pogrom on Turkish and Southeast Asian immigrants in Rostock, in the former East Germany, where an immigrant shelter was burned down. You know, very ominous things have gone down over the course of the past 20 years. And, of course, all of this happening in the context of, you know, once again, all of the Greens and anarchists and people who believed in socialism with a human face sort of being, you know, shunted aside, and an unequivocal capitalist restoration being effected throughout the former East Bloc. So I don't know if it's exactly a case of meet the new boss, same as the old boss, but certainly not what a lot of us were looking forward to or hoping for back in 1989. And, you know, in fact, I've probably ranted about this before, you know, and I'm sure I'm not alone here in, you know, actually having a little bit of nostalgia for the Cold War. And I should make clear that, you know, I've never been an apologist for Stalinism the way some voices on the left have been and continue to be, unfortunately. And in fact, you know, one of the reasons that I was looking forward to the end of the Cold War is because I thought that there could be finally the emergence of some kind of a third camp, which would be neither capitalist nor Stalinist, and could actually be, you know, anti-capitalist and anti-Stalinist. And again, something, you know, where there could be the kind of historical opening for, you know, anarchism or socialism with a human face, green politics, something like that, something along those lines. And, in fact, that rhetoric, the rhetoric of a third camp and a force which opposes both capitalism and communism has been appropriated by neo-fascists, unfortunately. And in fact, they're the ones who have sort of filled that gap. And in terms of, you know, the stance of the left, things have really gone from bad to worse because, you know, I mean, in some ways, all right, not in all ways. Okay. There's been some progress, I suppose, but in the Cold War, while there, you know, there were these illusions about communism, state communism, actually existing socialism, if you will, although I would argue it wasn't even really socialism. You know, since then, there have been sectors of the left in the West which have turned into a, you know, cheerleaders for fascism, for Slobodan Milosevic, for instance. And it was profoundly embarrassing in my entire, and demoralizing and depressing, in my entire career as an anti-war activist, going all the way back to when I was 18, you know, there was never a worse moment than during the NATO bombardment of Yugoslavia, where, you know, the Albanian community here in New York City was marching around waving the American flag with banners saying "Thank you, NATO," and the anti-war movement was, you know, not all of the anti-war movement. There were some significant exceptions, but large chunks of the anti-war movement, those who really aggressively organized the protest to the bombardment, were, you know, really rallying around Slobodan Milosevic. And of course, I'm speaking here of the International Action Center and Ramsey Clark and the Workers' World Party. So, which unfortunately continue to be a very significant presence on the so-called anti-war left. So really depressing. Now, what's in the news these days, right? Well, unfortunately, what's dominating the news, what's dominating the headlines is this big spectacle that we've just witnessed in Berlin, where, you know, there was this big celebration and they had all of these giant dominoes erected, which they then dropped at the moment that the Berlin Wall came down 20 years ago to, you know, symbolize the fall of the communist regimes. And, you know, this, it's unbelievable to me that even after what we've witnessed over the course of the past year with the capitalist system now, you know, teetering on the brink of collapse, that there's still this kind of abject triumphalism about the fall of communism, and not any real grappling with the objective disaster that the restoration of capitalism in the post-communist world has been in simple human terms. You know, most obviously in the bloodlettings in the Caucasus and the Balkans, and the related, you know, resurgence of neo-fascism throughout the former communist world, really, you know, especially, you know, Germany, Poland, the Ukraine, etc. And then you're just the economic consequences of, you know, the plummeting of Russian life expectancy and the implosion of the agricultural system in the former Soviet Union, the virtual abandonment of controls on toxic industries, the plunder of Siberia's forests, the sinister black market in Soviet nuclear materials, et cetera, et cetera. And finally, you know, I mean, it brought about the world we live in today, which is, you know, kind of no great shakes, okay? And it should be noted in this regard quite briefly that, you know, really, you know, Reagan, who is celebrated as this hero who brought down communism and liberated the world, blah, 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 blah. You know, his two stratagems, most significant stratagems to spend the Soviet Union into collapse, which is really what happened, were, first of all, the nuclear arms race and the Star Wars project. And in all of the this triumphalism, you know, people forget, you know, in 1989, everybody was euphoric. You know, 5 years before that, we weren't euphoric. We were scared out of our minds of nuclear war. Does anybody remember what things were like back in 1984? Okay, we were scared out of our minds of nuclear war. And that was one. All right. The other was the war in Afghanistan, and it was thanks to the U.S. pouring something like $5 billion into the Mujahideen that we had 9/11 and the whole resurgence of radical Islam, and which is just a part and parcel, I would argue, of the general resurgence of neo-fascism, a part of the greater greater tendency on a world scale, and particularly looking at what's happening in the Eurasian landmass, thanks to that we're still in Afghanistan, you know, today, you know, 20 years later. In fact, we were more deeply mired in Afghanistan than we were then. You know, then we were waging a proxy war. Today, we, quote unquote, meaning the United States of America, you know, we're occupying the country. We've got troops there and we're fighting a war, which brings me to one of the things that I wanted to rant about. I'm going to talk about a couple of things which are unfortunately not in the headlines right now. While, you know, the whole world is fixated on this spectacle that we just witnessed in Berlin, a couple of things which did not make the news. Well, one is that maybe you think that it's only cranks like Weinberg who remember that in addition to November 9th being the anniversary of the Berlin Wall coming down, it was also the anniversary of Kristallnacht in 1938. Well, I'm not the only one who remembered, okay? On this Sunday, the eve the anniversary of Kristallnacht. Giant swastikas appeared on the walls of the main synagogue in Dresden, in former East Germany. Unidentified perpetrators painted the graffiti covering approximately 6 meters of brickwork. Let's see, this is, I'm getting this from a paper. As far as I know, it got very, very little mainstream coverage. I'm getting this from from sources in the East. Sources, English language sources in Eastern Europe. Heinz Joachim Aris, the chair of the State Union of Jewish Communities in Saxony, said he was disgusted and frightened by the crime. He does not understand how it could happen, as the synagogue is usually guarded by police. The case is being investigated by Germany's Special Commission on Right-Wing Extremism. Saxony is one of the German states where right-wing extremists are currently flourishing. The far-right National Democratic Party of Germany, NDP, which is really the successor of the Nazi Party, has supporters there and sits in the state parliament in Dresden, as well as in a couple of other German states. So in the former East, including Pomerania. So there, that's ominous. See, it isn't just paranoid left-wing Jews like Weinberg who remember Kristallnacht, but my neo-Nazi enemies also remembered Kristallnacht. They faced the synagogue in Dresden with swastikas on the very eve of Kristallnacht. And while the whole world was paying attention to this triumphalist spectacle in Berlin, I didn't see that this got any significant media coverage. If you want to read about it, you can go to, guess what, my blog, World War IV Report, www.4report.com. You can read about it there. That's an Arabic numeral 4. And here's one which is even more ominous. Well, you know how left-wing propagandists with their penchant for hyperbole might say that, you know, the Nazis are occupying Afghanistan. Well, guess what? The Nazis really are occupying Afghanistan. This is not a joke. Also, reading from the account that I wrote up from English language sources in Eastern Europe. Nazis occupy Afghanistan. Really? Two Czech commanders from the elite 4th Brigade of the Rapid Reaction Forces, who have just returned from Afghanistan, wore the shield designs of Nazi SS brigades and divisions on their helmets for almost their entire tour of duty in Logar province, according to a November 9th report in the Prague Daily Mlada Fronte Dines, if I'm pronouncing it correctly. Forgive me if there's any Czech speakers out there. Hope I'm not mangling your language too badly. The report notes that these same commanders were decorated days early in a ceremony for their model fulfillment of their Afghan mission by the Czech defense minister, Martin Bartok. According to the report, there is no evidence that Bartok was aware that the two elite soldiers had Nazi sympathies. The helmets of Lieutenant Jan Sermak and Warrant Officer Hinek Matonha were decorated with the shields of the SS Hohenstaufen and Dirl Wagner brigades. The Daily reports that the Czech soldiers serving in Afghanistan had already informed their superiors of the display of Nazi insignia, but the commander of the Czech units in Logar province, Colonel Petr Pochazka, merely ordered the incineration of the helmet covers, along with the photographic evidence. However, a few of the images taken by fellow members of the brigade survived and were leaked to the to Mlada Fronte Dines, the Czech newspaper. They were displayed on the paper's website. So a big round of applause for those Czech soldiers who leaked the images and went public with the reports to the Czech press when their superior had, essentially tried to cover it up. Round of applause for you guys. Thank you. So Cermak, when contacted by the press, said, "I put it there just for kicks," and blamed youthful recklessness. Okay. Defense Minister Bartok said that both Cermak and Matonha would be suspended. "There is no place in the army for people who think this way," he said in a statement. However, there was no word on whether any action would be taken against their commander, Colonel Prochazka, for apparently trying to hush up the affair. Interestingly, 2 days before the Czech scandal broke, the New York Times reported that German soldiers are engaged in a ground offensive for the first time since World War II, fighting Taliban insurgents in northern Kunduz province, which strikes me as ominous. Now, this is not the first time the German armed forces have been in combat since World War II. That was during the bombardment of Serbia in 1999, right? Yes, June of 1999, just 10 years ago. 10 years ago and change now. And that's, you know, particularly ominous. Now, they did not take a lead role in the bombing, which was, of course, left to the U.S., but they had a token involvement in the bombing. And for people who know their history, the notion of the Germans bombing Serbia is just deeply, deeply wrong. In the name of, democracy and standing up to ethnic extremism, it's just deeply, deeply wrong. So, let's see. And German forces were also involved in a controversial airstrike in Afghanistan back in September, where their troops on the ground called in an airstrike. I don't believe it was actually German planes that carried out the strike, but it was their troops on the ground that called in an airstrike on two fuel trucks, which turned out to be civilian and had no link to insurgents or anything. And there was a pretty grave toll in civilian casualties when these fuel trucks blew up. And NATO has conducted an investigation into this, which, guess what, has exonerated the soldiers involved. An honest error. They behaved appropriately. Now, interestingly, I did a little research. It's a little very cursory research, mostly Wikipedia, I will confess, on these two SS brigades whose insignia were worn on the helmets of these Czech soldiers. And one of them, the Dirlewanger Brigade, was actually used against anti-Nazi partisans in Slovakia in 1944. And people who know their history will remember that before World War II, there was a country called Czechoslovakia, which the Nazis dismantled. They separated Slovakia off from the Czech Republic, or what's now the Czech Republic, and turned it into an independent, ostensibly independent, or officially independent satellite state under Nazi occupation, of course. And whereas what's now the Czech Republic, the western half of the country, was, you know, directly occupied. And there wasn't even any kind of, you know, collaborationist regime which was set up. It was just directly occupied. So, finally in 1944, the Slovaks, who were essentially the same people as the Czechs, they speak the same language, which is why the Allies created a country called Czechoslovakia in 1918, the Slovaks in 1944 got tired of living under the Nazis, and even though they were granted an ostensibly independent state, they had a national uprising, and which was pretty brutally put down, as you might imagine. And ironically, you know, it was the same one of these same SS brigades which these two Czech troops were emulating, who were involved in the repression. And of course, also, I mean, the SS carried out really horrific reprisals against against the Czechs themselves. Okay, I mean, most notoriously after, let's see, what year would that have been? In 1942, the SS commander Reinhard Heydrich was assassinated by Czech partisans, by Czech resistance fighters, and in response, the Nazis, raised Czech villages to the ground and summarily killed hundreds of Czech civilians. So this is what I sort of don't get. However much these Czech ultra-rightists may hate Jews and Roma and Turks and so on, why on earth do they identify with the Nazis who occupied, dismantled, and humiliated their country in World War II? I really don't get it. So if there are any Czech neo-Nazis who are listening tonight, maybe you can explain it to me. Give me a call. If there's any Czech neo-Nazis out there, give me a call and explain it to them, because I really don't get it. 212-209-2900. But, you know, nobody's called in yet, so my inclination is to assume that there aren't any Czech neo-Nazis listening, and play more Turkish music, just in case there are any neo-Nazis listening, just to irritate them. And also because I happen to love it. I think it's great. So that's what we're going to do instead of taking phone calls for the remainder 25 minutes. We've got one call. Should I assume it's actually a Czech neo-Nazi who can explain it to me? I don't know about this. Okay, you're on the air.
I won't. Maybe I'm not a Czech neo-Nazi, but maybe you can decide that after I finish talking.
Well, go ahead.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, but there's a certain hysteria involved in the way you're talking. I went to see my nephew. My brother-in-law happens to be Jewish, and I was and my brother lives with them. And I was helping fix his car, and I left some tin cans that I've been cutting up on the bottom of the driveway. My brother-in-law came by and saw that there were scraps of the tin cans on the driveway, and he freaked out because he said, "Oh, I thought it was anti-Semites who had thrown something on my driveway to puncture my tires," and this sort of like surprised me. And I'm sort of like listening to you freaking out about the Berlin Wall.
All right, well, hang on a minute. Hang on. I think the immediate question is whether your Jewish relative has, in the past, suffered anti-Semitic attacks. That's the relevant question.
Well, I rather suspect
or harassment or comments or anything like that.
I think it's more likely, since I grew up in the same neighborhood as he did, that he suffered from being educated by a Zionist sort of reminding.
So I'm not interested, okay? Not interested. You know, this whole notion that anti-Semitism is just this, you know, conspiracy which was invented by Zionists to justify their atrocities in Palestine doesn't wash with me. I'm terribly sorry. If you aren't disturbed about the news clips which I just read, then you're not paranoid enough. Get more paranoid. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hey.
No. Okay, that's it. Turkish music. I've had enough. Let's go out for some more Turkish music just to annoy... No, not just to annoy the neo-Nazis. Actually, that's just one of the side benefits. That's not the primary reason we're doing it. So I should say that it's 7 minutes after the hour being 1 o'clock in the morning, on listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM. This is the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade, and I am one paranoid Jew and proud of it, Bill Weinberg. Let's hear some more from Mersan Dede. Feeling better already. Ah, how beautiful. More Mersan Dede. Well, I feel much better now. I must say that, you know, it's a pretty clear-cut choice. I can either take phone calls and tell me that and listen to people telling me that that swastikas being painted on the walls of the Dresden Synagogue on the eve of the Kristallnacht anniversary is, you know, nothing to worry about. Or I can listen to some, you know, racist fool making bogus Indian chants and get all angst-ridden and agitated. Or I can listen to Mersan Dede and feel much better. So it's a pretty clear-cut choice. And, you know, that's reminded me that I wanted to bid a fond farewell to our late departed friend and comrade, Tony Short. And what reminded me is that Tony, bless her soul, was one of the few people around here who could be more short and snippy with the callers than me. So I always admired her in that regard, that she didn't let the callers push her around. So she will be missed. Tony Short will certainly be missed by me, Bill Weinberg, on the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. Hail and farewell, Tony Short. Maybe we'll take phone calls some other night. We're not taking them tonight. I've already decided against it. So all of you people who are trying to call in, you can go away. If you really, really, really have something to say, you can leave a message on my voicemail and I'll get the message. 212, write it down, 212-631-1115. If you really have something to say, leave a message on my voicemail. 212-631-1115. Not taking phone calls tonight. Maybe we'll take phone calls some other night. And if you leave something intelligent to say on my voicemail, I'll be happy to give it a considered listen. If you're going to leave hate-filled, vulgar rants, I'm not going to listen. I am going to delete them without listening. So don't waste your breath. Let's hear a little bit more from, let's hear a little bit more Turkish music, and then I'll identify it later in the 10 minutes remaining to us. Whoops. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Why didn't that play? Here, let's try again. Yeah, I know. Learn the board, Weinberg. Learn the board, Weinberg. Yeah, this is what it's all about.
remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive. Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.